Welcome.
Thank you.
To a very special episode of Lab Talks. We are on the road. You very graciously hosted us here in your lovely offices and your even nicer set. So thank you for having us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for being here.
I wanted to start, I guess, at the beginning. We were talking briefly before we stepped in here that you've been around the crypto space for a while. Mm-hmm. What led you there in the first place?
It's a good question. I've started in crypto since actually 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Where I was studying economics, but I was always trying to achieve financial freedom.
Okay, yeah.
Actually, the word freedom.
Yeah.
I was an entrepreneur since I've been 14. So yeah. It's 17 years already.
Okay, yeah.
But that died down. So I had a mobile phone web shop in 2007, okay, 2008.
Yeah. Nice.
And the crisis came in,
yep.
And the big players came in, and it just died down.
Yep.
I couldn't make it larger. Mm. Tried it with refurbished phones, same story.
Okay, yeah.
So I studied economics during that period, and I felt that there was no click with it. Like,
right.
Like studying all the models, it just doesn't make sense. Mm. And then Bitcoin came around and the altcoins came around, and I was like, hey, I can trade.
Yeah.
I can, it's very volatile. Mm-hmm. I can make money out of this. Mm-hmm. I can do it from anywhere I want. That was the idea. So
yeah.
That's how I got involved in crypto, wrote the entire 2017 cycle, mm-hmm. and basically went full time at the peak.
Nice.
So, but that was the vision behind stepping into crypto and believing in Bitcoin instead of going for a 9-to-5 job in the business district.
Yeah, I think it's kind of similar, I guess, to me. I came at it from an advertising angle, mm-hmm. and the thing that intrigued me the most, because I studied product design at university, so I wasn't from a finance point of view, but I like to understand the way things work. I like to understand the way that advertising auctions worked and like the real-time bidding. And as soon as I came across crypto, it was Chorley, our co-founder, that got me into it. But I could immediately see how they were very, very similar. And I was like, shit, you can make quite a lot of money from this. And I made some money, not a lot, sadly. But that is what really dragged me in. And then it was like, okay, how could you apply this to something else? Mm-hmm. And then have just been talking to people about that ever since. But obviously, trading is a bit of a departure from what you do now. So, like, what made you decide to become a key opinion leader and like tell other people about what you've done? Was it just you're excited to tell people, or you think you had some value? Like, what was the spur?
Well, it actually happened by accident.
Okay.
I started my Twitter account and I joined some communities during 2017, mm-hmm. to just like learn and know more about
all
the coins we had back in that period. And then I started my social media channel. And actually, back in the day, I used something like Elliott Waves.
Okay, yeah.
With the ABC corrections and all those things. It's just like, you need to be very good at it to make it work.
Yeah.
But during that period, I actually predicted that Bitcoin was going to go to 6K.
Okay, yeah.
Around that peak.
Mm-hmm.
And that blew up my entire social media account.
Okay, right, yeah.
So then I was like, okay, so I think I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I think. And I started my own trading group and got my office at the Amsterdam Stock Exchange. And from there, basically, it's been a journey of educating myself throughout all the decisions that I make. And from my experience, trying to give value or add value to the people that are following me.
Yeah.
So that has been through trading and investing, and now it's kind of different, but it's always been just, how can I get value out of it?
Yeah.
And reverse that back towards my followers.
Mm.
And that's also, how do I make mistakes very transparently, openly about speaking about it, and my followers know that too.
Yeah.
So that's how you create a connection, I would say.
Yeah.
And just keep them. It's funny, we quit the previous company like a year ago.
Yeah.
And still people keep coming in. As in, they keep coming in on my socials, on the consultancy, or whatever we have. It's just like the actual connection is there.
I think when you start to build trust with an audience and are like, as you said, because you like you collect your badges, don't you? It's like, I've forgotten my seed phrase, like I've been liquidated on Binance, I've been in a rug pull. You like kind of gather your badges, and I think that people don't want to talk about it. It's just like the big P&L, and that's really not the case with when you're learning anything. And I think particularly in crypto, it's why I really admire what you do, is that you go from not being someone that can trade crypto to being given access to all of the toys and all of the leverage that would probably in TradFi take you a very long time to like even get access to. And that, I think that's one of the coolest parts about it, but equally like one of the riskier parts about it is like, if you don't know what you're doing, you're now like swimming in the ocean and you better figure out fast. Otherwise like a bigger fish just comes and kind of eats you up a little bit. And
yeah, I mean, the fun part is that, well, not a fun part, but during the previous cycle, I unlocked all sorts of levels on a personal side.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden you're going to make an enormous amount of money you've never seen before.
Yeah.
And I kept on making wrong decisions during that period, in the sense that I was like, you know what? We're going to have a super cycle. My revenue is going down. We just keep on adding team members and scaling up while having all my money in altcoins, or like most of it in crypto. So within a year, I went from an enormous amount of money to almost bankrupt.
Yeah.
And I think the scars you've seen, all my health issues and everything that has been taking place. And I think it's just very similar to what a lot of people experience when they go through the cycles. They usually start when the price is super high.
Yeah.
That's when everybody gets pumped up. They fall heavily, experience a new cycle, make new mistakes, and just continue progressing. And the fun thing is too, is that I went from being a trader to a KOL, and now we are a venture capital trying to have an impact from inside, assisting Alchemy, but also assisting other projects or portfolio companies. And I always figure that if I level up from being an influencer, quote unquote, to a venture capital, that all of a sudden everybody is cool with each other. But the higher you get, the more unethical people become. I've been talking to VCs and to market makers that actually have no idea what they are doing.
Yeah.
Or have an idea what they are doing, but they are just crushing projects. And I think that has to change, and that keeps on being our motivation to keep on moving forward. And we are getting surprised on a daily basis. But we're just like trying to have that like flow.
Yeah. I think it's like that's a cool thing about blockchain, right, is that it's a new way to fund ideas, right? Because like in the past, you'd go down the traditional venture route, and your first round, you'd probably sell more than you wanted to. And if you didn't sell equity to the right person, like I had dinner with a guy that had a lot of experience with this, and he made this point. I'd not thought about this, but it's like if you're a large fund and you're investing in companies through equity, and you're a company and you get an investment, you don't know what schedule the fund is on in terms of what it owes money to and its LPs, right? So like you're a company that's like demonstrating revenue growth and you're hiring new people and you found product market fit, but you've raised money from a fund that's 18 months away from having to pay out to their LPs. And all of a sudden they're like, okay, these numbers are good, but they need to be better, and you need to do this and you need to do that. And they have a board seat so they can actually make you do that. And then they're like, you need to raise again, and you start doing it now, which then take your eyes off the ball, you focus less on the product, like then that round might be a bad down round, and then you might have funny liquidation preferences, and that can really kind of curtail the impact. Like it's,
you get in a spiral that goes absolutely downhill like super fast.
Through no fault of your own, right? Like you're an excited entrepreneur that's raised money, but the fund that's given you the most is like, well, I've got to pay out my LPs, so that's what's going to happen. And you're part of that, so you've got to do these things. And I think you don't have that so much in if you're funding it with a token, right? Like you can like, okay, we've written a white paper, we've raised some money through a private sale, the token's launched, we can do a thing. But I think the counterpoint to that is, at least in my opinion, the only thing that's worse than not having enough money is having too much of it, because you like become wasteful and you make mistakes, you take your eyes off the ball. And like there's blockchain companies that like launch a token and then make it, and then it's like, well, what's the incentive for you to ship anything now, because you've got everything you ever wanted and you've only just like really got to the start line. And I think that just makes it a really exciting space to be in. I think, I don't know if you feel the same, but I feel, for one, very fortunate to be in the position where I get to be building a company that's using a new and novel technology that is going to fundamentally change the way that transactions take place, the infrastructure take place. And where do you, I think the obvious answer is like finance, and we can talk about that if you want to, but like outside of that, like what areas are you most excited about in terms of like, where can we go? Where's the needle going to get pushed?
Well, when we talk about blockchain and Web3, I think the phrase is currently Web3.
Instead
of crypto.
Yeah.
I think on all levels, we are getting in the perfect storm.
Yeah.
And why I say perfect storm is that we've got AI coming up.
Yeah.
And we've got, like, the past 5 years, we've tried ICOs, we've tried IDOs, we've tried DeFi, we've tried NFTs. It all was not there yet.
Yes, I agree.
And now we are kind of having that basket of all those verticals that we tried and failed. And most of those teams kept on building.
Yep.
So you're in the perfect storm of having all of these things being integrated into new models that actually work.
Yeah.
You can't really say that, for instance, something is entirely DeFi. Usually it is DeFi, RWA, AI, infra all together. And just the models have been improving in the sense that, for instance, Alchemy is RWA. But you could also say, yeah, in some sort it's DeFi.
Yeah.
Because you can generate yield through being a validator, for instance.
Yeah.
So I think we're just in that perfect storm where we are finally able to attract users that don't know that we use blockchain.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah.
So I don't have a specific narrow window where are we going to. But from a retail investor perspective, I think DeepIn is super interesting, or at least as a hype. Gaming with Off the Grid is showing a use case where we can just exchange skins on the blockchain.
Yeah.
For DeFi, becomes very interesting for institutional investors as well. So there are all levels that are just playing, and we're just in that exponential curve of attracting new users. And that is also why I think maybe for you, Alchemy is such a example of being one of the first providing such a solution for an industry through Web3. And on top of that, we get a sort of like small extra gift, which is AI.
Yeah.
I think blockchain and AI are just like the best solution together.
Yeah,
How do you see that?
Yeah, I think it's very kind words. I appreciate that. I think often the stick I get hit with is that we're too Web2, and I'm like, it doesn't really matter.
I'd rather want you to be Web2.
Yeah,
it's
massive, right? Like everyone uses the internet. That's Web2. And the internet's funded by ads. And that's kind of the, I want to call it a niche at $600 billion, but that's the niche that we're in. But it's, and I've spoken about this with some of the brands that we work with. And one of our clients is Coca-Cola. And they have existed for 138 years. That's an impressive feat by anyone's stretch of imagination. You're like, that's no one really does that. And the reason they do that is because they are innovative companies. And our non-exec director, a chap called Rob Bradley, he helps us out a lot, but his day job is at Warner Brothers. That's an innovative company as well. That's been around for 90 years. You know, like those businesses are innovative because they wait to see what happens with technology. And then when they see that it's hitting the things it needs to hit, they might have missed some of the early gains from moving first, but they're very deliberate when they do it and then execute really well on it. And I think that at least in the conversations we're having with those kind of people, they're like, you know, like, okay, this blockchain thing is, it's gathering some pace, you know, like the financial mainstream has adopted it and you have Bitcoin ETFs that are breaking records, you know, like that is a great lighthouse of like, here's where we are. This is what we're, there's people over here, right? And I think it's going to be interesting to see how that filters out from that, because like, they're doing it. They're like, well, maybe, you know, like kind of people start leaning over and it's like, well, maybe we should do it. Mm-hmm. And how do we do it? And who do we speak to? And the what was a headwind now becomes a tailwind. And that makes me very excited for where it's going to go. Even in the next 6 to 12 months, like if you look at the last 9 months, you've gone from zero ETFs to BlackRock's ETF that's bigger than gold, you know, yeah. Which is like kind of
best year ever for any ETF.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. Like that's that, and that's happened in like 9 months, you know, mm-hmm. like that's obscene, really. It just kind of gets squashed together, you know. I think this is from a BlackRock slide, but it's like the internet was adopted at kind of like a curve that kind of looked like that, you know, and then mobile phones, because they were built on the internet, were adopted quicker. And then you have like the means to transfer information around the world with the internet, and then you can take it wherever you want to in your mobile phone, and now you can transfer value on it.
Yeah.
And that is why the blockchain curve is so steep, because it's standing on the two shoulders of like giants of technology, and it's just going to, it's going to be crazy what that opens up. I think it's also
just like multiple levels at the same time. Like you've got Bitcoin on institutional and governmental level.
Yeah.
You've got Ether opening up doors for yield seekers mm-hmm. on a relatively safe manner.
Yeah.
That is also institutional, but also high net worth individuals, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then you have a big sort of bucket of retail solutions that can transform lives. Like the fact that we are able to add value or provide value for everything that we do in life on a very low entry barrier. Like if you have the ability to earn $30 while watching a video or having a mobile phone with Deepin, like Deepin is still very undefined, but it opens up the doors for instance, people in India or in Africa that can actually make some income out of anything that they do.
Yeah.
So it makes it more efficient, more transparent, more open, borderless.
Mm.
I really fancy the VC name Borderless, which I think is just a nice synonym.
Yeah, it's cool, actually. Yeah.
So I think that on all levels, we are just like making that breakthrough.
Yeah.
Where it clicks. And I think 4 years ago, and if you look at it from an investment perspective, there are so many projects out there right now where you can finally start building an investment thesis for 3 or 5 years.
Mm.
And I think that we're not going to have the 4-year cycles anymore.
Mm.
Maybe this is the final one, the big one. But a lot of investments that we do and thesis that the Web2 founders have is multi-year.
Yeah.
For instance, for Alchemy as well. Mm. It's just expanding year after year after year, which maybe is going to have some impact on price too over time. But you can start integrating it into your portfolio for a longer period. And that's also for Bitcoin and for Ethereum, while getting more liquidity from Web2 and from every level that we have.
Yeah. Because I still think one of the coolest things about, just using Ethereum as an example, is like, you can create a wallet and then you can receive any amount of Ethereum in that wallet and it's yours. No one's asking you any questions, you know, like you can't really do that with a bank, you know, like, and that, and it's not, people would say, well, that means that people can do nefarious things. And like, sure, they can do that, but they can do it with cash, you know, like it's still, I think I was reading an article in the FT today, actually, and there was a big, money laundering scam that was unearthed in the UK. And something like $5 billion had been laundered through Tether. And I can't remember the exact name of the quote from the guy, but he was like, well, there's way more money laundering that's happening in cash. You know, as a percentage, it's a tiny amount. So it's a bit of a straw man argument, because if you're saying that's bad for crypto, then you're saying that's bad for cash, and everyone uses cash anyway. So it's like the detracting factors, I think, unless you're being deliberately obtuse in your opinion, are true for both. It's just like with Ethereum, you can, so for example, our payroll, we have an office in India, we have 42 developers there, some of like the most talented people I've met. We can send stable coins to them and they can do payroll. And it's like, it costs you like a dollar.
Yeah.
And it gets there in 20 minutes every single time. as long as you don't get the address wrong, but we always double check those.
Desk transfer every time.
Because you get it wrong once and you're like, send it to the wrong address, you get another badge. But just even that is cool. And like, if you're a multinational business, right, like a lot of the media agencies that we work with have an office in North America and an office in the UK and then satellite offices across Europe and APAC. It's like, at the moment, there's large teams that are involved in the back office and moving money around their various offices for whatever reason that is. It's like, that could be done by a smart contract. Mm-hmm. And then you could, I mean, sure, it might mean that some of those jobs don't need to exist anymore, but it means that you can put more into what makes media agencies great, which is like innovative ways for brands to reach their audiences on new channels, which is ultimately what wins them the business, and less of the back office stuff, which is essential but can be replaced by smart contracts. Coupled with AI, it's like the efficiencies there for those kind of businesses are going to be like astronomical, you know. And then they go back to what makes them great, which is, how do we deliver the outcomes that the brands that want us to buy media on their behalf are looking for and deliver value to our clients? And that is something I'm sure senior leaders at those agencies are thinking about, because it's a tough game buying different media, different businesses.
Yeah.
Like, it's process intense, but a lot of those processes can be automated.
Mm-hmm. I had a conversation with Raoul Paul the other day, and he mentioned AI and robots and the amount of productivity growth we're going to have through having those on Earth.
Yeah.
And indeed, if we can just erase the noise and let founders just build tech, the amount of growth that we're going to have is just enormous.
Yeah.
It's also, I think that's a stage that we're currently at, that there are a lot of Web2 founders or Web2 builders that are looking to swap towards Web3 because there's an actual use case for the token. And that is putting a lot of risks in their hands. Like, if you have the wrong VC investor becoming the lead investor, it can crush your project.
Yeah.
If you have the wrong tokenomics, it can crush your project. If you have the wrong KOLs or the wrong market maker, or it's just a completely different, unscattered world.
Yeah.
That you rather want to have a Web2 founder just build and then have a Web3 market maker that has proven to be right. A Web3 VC investor has proven to be relatively okay. That is like, so, and then that's, I think the markets are just defining which ones are good and the bad ones are grabbing themselves together, and you can see it out of the listings in the future of those projects. I think that's also the beauty of blockchain. People use cash to mix it up or do illegal transactions. In crypto, they do it too, but in crypto, it's not anonymous.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you can track it, right? Yeah.
So, and if you talk about percentages, it's just way less, and you can just track it.
Yeah,
that's the downside of blockchain. Your privacy is just gone.
To a degree. Yeah, I think it's a different kind of privacy, right? Because like, your bank still knows where you send money to, and then someone does a credit check and then they can see that if you're buying a house and you've been betting on Arsenal every weekend, like, they're like, why are you using Sky Bet? It's like, well, how do you know that? It's like, well, because we can see what you're doing. And it's like, that's even more, like, at least there's like the obfuscation of a wallet, just like an alphanumeric string, where it's like, unless you, this is benputley.eth, like, it's quite hard to tie it to exactly what I'm doing. Or if I've signed in with an email in my wallet, then sure, it's easy to tie those two things together. But that's no different to your device ID on your phone and signing in with a single sign-on on Google, right? Like, that's one of the powers of why they've been so successful, is because they're good at targeting.
And people just do not know how much of their privacy is gone already.
Yeah, exactly.
The only thing is with blockchain is that it's just in front of your eyes.
Yeah.
And like, the nobody reads terms and conditions.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
So if you have an iPhone and you go into the app store, you need to approve that, or any app you download.
Yeah.
Which is basically just saying, yeah, give me your data.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And with a blockchain, the good part is that you can actually use your own data.
Mm.
Or you can use your own value or any collateral that you have, and you can just do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And I think, in my opinion, that to some degree, government should step in. Mm. Like the old pump.fun saga we've experienced the past few weeks. Right? Or exchanges doing illegal activities. Mm. Or then, yes, of course, someone needs to step in, but the markets are stepping in themselves.
Yeah.
And further, you shouldn't be having a case where, for instance, if you have a different sort of, well, skin color, and you're not able to get a certain job, that's also something that's really bad. But it's the same for opportunities within blockchain or things that you want to do, which a bank is preventing you from. Yeah. With blockchain, you can still do it. It creates a bunch of opportunities for people that are not having those in real life.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think one of the cool things about blockchain is that it doesn't necessarily matter which school you went to or university degree you have. It's like if you know something and you're willing to collaborate with other people, you get welcomed into a community and then you can just like create a job for yourself. You know, like I think there's a chap in the UK called Cap and he runs the super teams for Solana. He runs the UK super team and they've gone from, it's really amazing to see, they've gone from like a space sporadically that they rented and now they've got, and they're opening up a like a permanent space in Liverpool Street, so in the heart of the city of London.
That's pretty cool.
Opposite the Amazon office, you know, like, and it's, and like cool stuff's going to come out of that, you know, like there'll be some great developers, there'll be some great founders. There's, I was in the House of Commons last week, with Stand With Crypto, which is Coinbase's, I'm not sure exactly what you call it. It's not a charity per se, but it's the entity that's engaging with the government to help.
Foundation or so?
Maybe. It's big in America. Yeah. It's like in America, they managed to help get 220 pro-crypto politicians elected as part of the last government, which is obviously going to have its impact.
Mm-hmm.
The UK is now like, oh, America have done it. Maybe we should too, as we tend to do. And there was this great company called Agridex that had been built on Solana that had been...
Actually funny. We invested in that one.
Oh, did you? Nice. Yeah.
Actually, last week I was on a Spaces with Henry Duckworth.
Yes. Yeah, that's he was...
The founder.
Yeah, he was just after me on our little pitch that we did to the dragons in the House of Commons. But I think that he did a lot of work with Super Team, you know, and like that's cool that you can just walk in there and be like, okay, I'm willing to learn about blockchain. I've got, these are my skills that I've got, and they won't turn you away. Unless you're an asshole, but then most places would turn you away, right? But that is cool. It provides an alternative route for people to like, okay, this is where I'm going to go and this is how I'm going to do it, rather than just like A levels, university, graduate degree. It's like you can just plot your own path a bit more with crypto.
I think the only so in general, we do not care where you come from, who you are. If you're good at something, hell yeah, we hire you.
Yeah.
And I think that's also a lot of, actually some of our team members come from the Web 2 space, wanted to jump over into the Web 3 ecosystem. Yeah. It's a roller coaster.
Sure.
It's first year, but I mean, they like it a lot. But the only concern or thing that I still see, which I would favor having more female people in crypto.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah.
It's still a stigma around crypto where, and it's also, I mean, if you go to conferences, there is also a nature surrounding men that depends on which conference you go to. But if, for instance, if you go to Token or the bigger ones, it's not too female friendly.
Yeah.
But I would like to have a little bit more diversity in that sense. But indeed, it doesn't matter. If you're from anywhere in Pakistan, for instance, we can still have a job for you if that's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
It's all remote. You've got most of your staff in India seated. Actually, many exchanges don't have actual teams. And if they have teams, then their revenue is so much higher than a regular bank.
Yeah.
So it opens up doors. And I think that you mentioned Agridex, but there are so many RWA projects that are currently popping up with an actual use case where the teams are still this small and they are quickly expanding and hiring staff members from Web2.
Yeah. Like Crypto Autos was one. They seem to be doing quite well. They had a very brightly colored Lambo at Zebu Live a couple of months ago. Yeah. But seem to be gathering quite a lot of speed. It's quite cool. I think it's...
they are Dutch, right?
I think so, yeah. It's interesting to see the various use cases. And I think that we... And I've been listening to some of the stuff that Story Protocol have been talking about. Mm. Just raised an amazing round of cash. Good for them. The idea of like specific infrastructure as opposed to like general purpose infrastructure, you know, like, because that presents its own challenges. Mm-hmm. When it's like, I say this a lot, but you can build anything on Ethereum. And then someone that perhaps is coming from Web 2 to Web 3, it's like, yeah, but what? And it's like, well, anything. And it like that, going from like, you can build anything to like understanding specifically what to build, yeah, is like a big learning curve. So like our strategy has been like, we could have built anything, but we've chosen to like specifically build bringing ads on chain. But like,
that is difficult on its own.
That is difficult on its own. But I think what it does mean then is like, hey, we've got, because you can deploy any part of the ad serving application to our validators. Mm-hmm. So that might be a Web2 business that wants to save money on their current centralized infrastructure, could deploy the storage of certain parts of the ad auction or just notarize it on our ledger and then gain some efficiencies. And it's like, that's how our trajectory can be managed. You know, like there's a trajectory where we just sell ads, like Alchemy just like, we sell them, people buy them, that's great, but that kind of sets your trajectory here. But like, if you become a platform which people can build, mm-hmm, their businesses on, and people will think of stuff that we've never thought of, and I'm like, that is so cool, just use all this infrastructure.
It's almost open source.
And yeah, just like, exactly, just come and deploy building. It, because yeah, like, our whole point is that like, if you make capital more efficient, markets become more efficient. And
also more boring, actually.
Yeah.
But in a good way.
Yeah, because it's that, and I mean, running ads isn't the most exciting thing, you know. We're not saving lives, but it funds the internet, which is an exciting thing, you know, because mm-hmm, it's free for everyone, and that's kind of creaking a little bit. I can't remember where I was going with that point, but just that specific infrastructure. So, like, there's more.
This is something that is also, it's all super difficult. Like, mm-hmm, I got a lot of founders that say, I want to build a token. Yeah, for what purpose?
Yeah.
And then if you find an answer to that question, okay, now redefine that for being in business for 3 years.
Yeah.
What are going to be the flaws of the current system, mm-hmm, and what do you need to... Like, that's something that we quite regularly saw from the previous cycles, yeah, that a token was designed, but had one use case or two and then just limited.
Yeah.
How did you like... go from being a Web2 founder, basically, or solution provider, into integrating the token? Because that's a whole new game.
I think it's been an iterative process. So the inspiration really came from Ethereum moving from proof of work to proof of stake.
Mm. And then the cost and stuff, yeah,
being able to because that was the big problem, right? It's like, ad inventory, there's lots of it, and really it's very, very low value per ad. Like, ads are sold in thousands, mm-hmm, so, and then it's like three to $40 per thousand, but an individual ad isn't worth very much. So even the ability to notarize that on chain, if you're doing one ad at a time, it's a great way to go out of business in an afternoon, because like, you're getting a thousandth of a penny for an ad and it's costing you a dollar to write it on EVM. It's like,
well done.
Call me in an hour and I'll probably give you some money because you're going to run out.
But, so why ETH then?
Well, it's our own layer too.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, so it's like, the people that created Ethereum are much smarter than me, right? And like, the idea of using roll-ups, so we have snapshots, and then within each snapshot there is hundreds, if could be thousands, of transactions that are rolled up into it, and then we notarize that on chain. So like, that is zero knowledge roll-ups, basically. Mm-hmm. So we have hashed values of all the transactions. You can apply a compute function and you will see that nothing's changed. You'll get the same value. So you know that record is immutable. And that, just even that in ad tech is like transparency, right? You don't, there doesn't exist really because, and it's not really anyone's fault per se. It's just that like centralized server here is creating a load of processes and hosting an ad auction that has to speak to centralized server here that repeats similar processes, that speaks to server here that repeats similar processes so that they have reports to compare mm-hmm. against each other. But what would be better is if each of those processes just like, okay, this is what I've done and I've notarized it on chain. And this is what I've done and I've notarized it on chain. This is what I've done and I've notarized it here as well. And it's like, okay, well now everyone agrees of what happened because there can be instances where it's like pretty arbitrarily decided. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're happy to be within plus or minus 10% of each other in terms of what ads we think delivered and how much that costed. But that's quite a big variable.
Yeah.
Every month when you mm-hmm. do your reconciliation period. And then you have to reconcile it. So like you could spend 12 weeks a year just reconciling ad campaigns and it's like that is just solved by a ledger. So
yeah, like sure.
12 weeks back of your life and that's like a boring 12 weeks where you're like, ah, oh, it kind of matches and it's Friday now, so that's good enough.
Mm.
Not to trivialize the work they do, but, and then coupled with the fact that, okay, like that, if you've got different validators working in unison to notarize a ledger, you've then distributed the cost because I don't have to run all the servers as Alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
People are willing to do that if there's an incentive mechanism. And the incentive mechanism is there's a ton of ad dollars that are spent on chain, but like, obviously you use the internet. Like,
yeah.
Have you ever been paid to use the internet? Not really, no. And like, this is now a way where there's all this value changing hands and now you can, in running a validator, share some of that value or you can pull some liquidity and share some of that value. And I think your individual data isn't worth that much money because mm-hmm. the incentive mechanism's wrong, right? So let's say I wanted to earn $5 from watching ads online, I'd have to look at 5,000 display ads to get my $5. It's not good use of my time. Equally, it's no good for an advertiser because I've seen an ad for Coca-Cola 5,000 times now. And they're like, well, we could have had 5,000 people that saw that, but Ben sat there and refreshed his screen all day long to earn $5.
These models used to be there in Web 2, right?
Pardon me?
These models used to be there.
Yeah.
Where you had to like click on a lot of emails or whatever, and you get like 10 cents per email or whatever.
Exactly. But it skews the way it performs, right? And that's the shame of it, because the cool thing about digital ads is that you can have a really tight attribution model. So you know, I'm going to put $5 in and I'm going to get $7 of value out. Like you can't get that close if you put an ad outside there by the canal on a billboard. Like you mm-hmm. can probably see that it has some value, but you don't know for sure. And
untrackable.
Yeah, you can't do it on TV and you can't do it on radio, but it does work, but you just don't know quite how much or how well it works. But with digital, you know that it works. You know that you've been able to put some dollars in here and that's driven 8 installs or that mm-hmm. has delivered a basket value of $7. Now, it's not perfect because it can over-index towards digital because let's say there's an Adidas billboard out there with a pair of football boots, I see that and I'm like, I want those football boots. So mm-hmm. I go onto Google and I'm like, Adidas football boots, click. Google gets attributed with that last click, but it was the billboard. And there's no, like, how you can't go from analog to digital like that unless I'm like, oh, by the way, it wasn't Google, it was
You need to go back.
I'll put it in my checkout. And he knows, it wasn't actually Google search that maybe buy this ad, it was the billboard.
But it's the same with cookies.
Yeah.
I mean, if for instance, that used to be happening in the past, but if you were watching me on YouTube, and I say that you should be doing something or mm-hmm. click on a link,
mm-hmm.
while you did it a year ago with someone else,
and
you click on the link, I should be getting
a
sort of notification that someone has actually been using that link, but actually it goes all the way back to the one a year ago.
Yeah.
That's also quite annoying.
Exactly, and that's where, again, we're not here yet, but like you could reasonably tokenize every ad that was on a page. So it could be like an NFT of some description.
Yeah.
And I think we'll get more and more used to connecting a wallet to do something online, whether that's checkout, whether that's log into an account, whatever it is, it's more than likely, I think, that will start using wallets for that. So then when a wallet is connected and you have a unique identifier for an individual ad unit, and you say, okay, this wallet saw this, I'll use my Adidas football boots example again, an Adidas football boot, and then I go to Adidas and I buy the football boots with my wallet or the money that's in my wallet, you can then say, okay, we know that 15 minutes ago we saw this ad on whatever, GQ. Here you go, GQ, you get part of the basket. And you can start to just reward the publications that are driving that. And it might not be that it's just traditional media. It might be games in Telegram. It might be the new social platform like Lens Protocol or Farcaster that are also like using advertising, because ad tech really touches everything and funds a ton of stuff. You know, like Google's an ad tech company, Meta's an ad tech company, OpenAI looks like it might start to become an ad tech company because they all run advertising. And it, you get to this, you know, we were talking about this earlier, but like your adoption curve starts to flatten out. And let's say you've got a really good VC that's helped you get there. They're like, hey guys, come on,
we need to
make some revenue. And it's like, well, subscriptions are flat again. And then you just like, Netflix have done it. They've got an ad-funded model. Spotify have got an ad-funded model, you know, because the subscriptions peak out. There's only so many people that want to do it.
You've got like the side of building the company and having the ad, becoming an ad tech company, but you've also got the investor side, which is venture capital.
Yeah.
And if you take that to Web3, then there are so many venture capitals at this point. The current market is just like whatever project you build, you will get money.
Yeah.
I remember that Starknet was raising on like $8 billion valuation.
Nice.
That's like ridiculous.
I don't know how where'd you go from there, you know?
Yeah, I don't, maybe they were consuming some stuff, but anyways, at least they got like $200 million out of that. Which is fine, but the valuation is just ridiculous. I think the reason why VCs keep on investing is for the wrong reasons, which is we've got people being seated there that needs to make money. So they got external investors.
Yep.
They're getting paid by management fee and they need to keep on investing.
Yeah,
and these are the ones that will be selling like the OpenAI or any company that goes into the curve, they will be selling it and won't be having the hands-on mentality. There are some smaller ones, VCs, that are just doing some investments. Like we are also sole LP. We don't have external investors. Makes it very flexible.
Yeah.
Like there's not someone standing behind me saying, you need to invest or you need to make the money. We've got another VC in Amsterdam that had a very good investment in Celestia.
Okay, yeah.
And that did an enormous, enormous return. But the investors were saying, yeah, you need to like, but they couldn't get out of it. They have a lockup.
Yeah.
So I think that if you have the VCs on board, it's a very tricky situation to be in because they can just like distract you from all the things that you need to do. You need to, you're kind of responsible to them. Like, how do you deal like with all those parties at this point? I think most are out already.
Yes. So our private sale was in 2021 and the vesting finished in middle of 2022.
Oh, that's short.
Yeah. So we did 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. Mm-hmm. And I certainly felt pressure because you knew there was unlocks coming and like, there's still that period of time where the exchange is obviously not as mature as it wasn't as mature as it is now.
It's a future definition,
right? Yeah, but it was tough because we launched the token in August of 2021 and it kind of did okay. And then
got crushed by the market.
You've got supply that's coming out at that point. Like you're becoming more diluted, you know, and that's difficult. I think what we were just like very transparent about the whole thing, you know, like here's what we're building. Here's the roadmap. Here's the people that we're speaking to. This is where we're getting to. This is where we think it's going to be going. You know, like we've been doing lab talks is like 3 years old now. We've gone from like my now wife and mum probably listening to it. So a few more people than that, which is cool. I'm not just talking to myself anymore.
But I know how it feels. I started the exact same way.
Yeah, you just like, you get the podcast stuff. You're like, yeah, I'm a podcaster. And then you're like, look, you're like, oh, one view. Like, not yet. we're getting there. Yeah, it's better than zero, right? But then I'm like, oh, I watched it. Fuck, so it is zero.
I think one of the bigger podcasters, Chris Williamson, just said the other day that he had 2.5 years of barely any views before he took off.
Yeah.
So
it's a long time in the doldrums, isn't it? Just barren, and then you see the Oasis.
And also, 90% of the podcasters quit before they get to the 10th episode.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think if you've released 21 episodes or more, you're in the top 5% of podcasts that have ever existed.
Really?
I believe that's the stat. But to go back to your question, I'm really fortunate to have co-founders like I've got. So like, there's certain things that I'm responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
Chorley takes care of the operations, does an amazing job at that. And then Chandru is a wizard. Like, one of the kindest and smartest people I've ever worked with, and has like built out this amazing development team in his image, really, of just like really talented people that work really hard, that get behind the mission of where we're trying to go. And I think people, that's another thing, is that you hit and miss when you hire people, right? And like, you get better at hiring people. And that's a lot of what I spend my time doing. It's like, okay, who do we need to hire and where do we get them from? And to begin with, it's like, okay, if we know them, they're probably going to want to take the risk. But then it's like people that you know, and that presents its own challenges anyway. But I think we're fortunate that the ad tech industry has become a little bit turgid. I kind of use this expression that we're like just kind of, it feels like it's butting up against the limits of the technology on which it's built. And that's why they're kind of looking back
just
inside.
Just like if you're working out for 8 years, you're like, you can't break through that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You need to like use new infrastructure or like change a workout program, do whatever it is that you need to do. And then people are hearing about blockchain a lot more now. So they're like,
that's true.
Oh, that's cool. And you guys do that for something I already know. I know about ad tech. I know how to sell ad campaigns. And I know the issues. And you solve those. I'm like, yeah, we're solving those. They're like, that's pretty cool. Like, we've just hired a new seller, Lauren from Taboola. Taboola's a massive ad tech company. I think they do over $1 billion in revenue. And she was like, what you guys are doing is pretty cool. I'd like to come and join your team. And I'm like, that's amazing.
You're welcome.
Yeah, like, that's cool, you know? So, yeah, the long-winded answer is that we kind of split up the things that we need to do. And we just trust each other. And
it's also beautiful. Like, you're working with your sister as well.
I have, she's our third employee, fourth employee after Chandra, I suppose. But she's come on leaps and bounds. You know, like, she was selling or marketing point of sale software for Laundrettes, and now does everything for the marketing for Alchemy. Wow. It's like been pretty, really cool as a big brother to see your younger sister like,
I bet,
grow up, because 4 years now.
It's for us, like, I started this with my girlfriend, and our first team member was her sister.
Okay, yeah.
So we're kind of like a family business.
Yeah.
Doing that in crypto is kind of like relaxing.
Mm.
Like, I've been building the previous company with one of my closest friends.
Yeah.
Didn't really feel good. So then once it doesn't click, the company usually goes the other way around.
Yeah.
And now we're building it with the three of us and having a lovely team of guys around it. It gives its challenges, but indeed, they are lovely. They are responsible for what they do. They're good at what they do. And it also helps that you know that they are actually, you can trust them.
Yeah.
That's the big, big difference there. Mm-hmm. You know that if you say a certain phrase, that they understand what you're saying and the other way around.
Yeah.
So, in terms of productivity, it goes up quite fast, because if you hire new staff members, you usually need to have like 3 to 6 months to explain everything, to get to know each other. You don't need to do that anymore. But then on the other way around, if we go home, how was your day? Yeah, we know.
Yeah, 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 it's yeah, like true. Kind of,
the balance is sometimes especially in crypto when the markets are going to go up.
Yeah.
It's all about crypto.
Yeah, it gets intense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's the bull markets are super fun, but are just like, I need a break.
Yeah.
As for you, it's also like, now it starts to take off.
Yeah.
Like, it's a whole different view than from our side. Like, I've got the social media, the companies, the investments. Mm. It's all just portfolios that we need to manage. But in your case, it's just getting more Web2 and Web3 companies plugging into Alchemy while more people are also getting in there as a retail investor or user of the platform.
Yeah.
Like, it's all just going in that exponential curve.
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
I think, well, I stopped drinking 418 days ago, so that helped.
Congratulations.
Yeah. It's a long time now. That was a big help. I think you get used to it. Like, I think it's, we've been quite fortunate. I mean, obviously people that launch a crypto company want to get to a $2 billion market cap yesterday, you know, and some do that. And I think, but then you don't get any time to learn.
Yeah.
The difference between like a $100,000 market cap and a $2 billion market cap is obviously substantial.
Yeah.
But just like, you don't realize all of the things that like, even just like the security of your treasury at that level becomes like an intense thing, you know? And then like, what do you do with the treasury, and like, how do you motivate yourself to like continue to build if you've just got, I've got $100 million, like that's cool, yeah, man. Like,
could just go away. Yeah, and like, just like,
beaches are quite fun, you know? Yeah. Like, so I think where we've had to work, I'm not saying that people don't work hard for it, but like where the market cap has like slowly grown as the business has grown, it just feels like that's how it should be done. It's kind of reflecting the progress of the business, you know, that seems more traditional in that sense. And then people don't get wild expectations, and there's an analogy that my dad always says. It's like you chuck a frog in water and you slowly heat it and it won't hop out, but if you chuck it in boiling water, it like bounces out. And I think that can be what happens if it just hockey sticks straight away. It's like, fuck, it's hot in here. I don't know how to handle it. But where it's like got hotter, you like, okay, I can figure it out, you know, like we've got this process in place and we've like rolled out, we use OKRs, so like that the first time we did it was a total shit show, and now like we're planning them at the moment for the next year, and it's like it's more considered and more people know how to do it, and we're more data driven, and just like you just kind of grow up, I think, and you just get used to the responsibility, and you, as long as you, I one of the things I always joke about is like you don't like, it's quite high, you know, you're just like, okay, we're going there and I'm going to concentrate on here and just keep checking if we're going that direction or not. And I don't really look over to see how high we've got because you spook yourself out.
Is it also like just coming down to just avoid distractions and keep the focus, as in?
Yeah, we certainly made those mistakes.
Are you also like, just you will see other projects going skyrocket out of nowhere.
Yeah.
How does that feel for...
Sometimes, like, yeah, the meme coins wow me out.
Yeah, same. Like, if someone just passes me from an investment perspective, yeah, and you're like, "Ha, you're in utility coins."
Yeah, it's like, oh, damn it. But I think
it's such a risky business anyway. So
I think I'm not the first person to say this, but it's like you can't just pick one thing that you want from a project or a person's life. It's like, okay, if you're going to be in that person's shoes, you've got to be in all of their shoes for everything. You can't just be like, I wish our market cap was $5 billion and that's all I take from that project. It's like, you don't know what's going on behind the hood. You don't know if their team gets on well. You don't know what investors they've got to deal with. You just don't know what you don't know. It's like, but it, don't get me wrong, it's a scoreboard.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
like, you're like, and you only look up the scoreboard. You never look down the scoreboard. So you're like, and then you go to the top and you're like, oh yeah, Bitcoin's $1 trillion. It's like, that's going to be tough to knock them off the top spot, you know? So like, I don't know. I think
It's also just completely irrelevant.
Yeah, that's true. It's a scoreboard. That's it, really.
Yeah, so I've been also going through this phase of like having everything, then basically nothing, and seeing all my friends just partying and doing great stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, feeling some sort of jealousy.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, currently, it's just about are you doing stuff that you really like?
Yeah, exactly.
And to be honest, some of my friends that are also KOL in the space, I just feel like that they are likely waking up and doing stuff to just make money.
Yeah.
Instead of really thinking deeply to see where and what can we do.
Mm.
Where for me personally, I just love what I'm building.
Yeah.
It's quite intense.
Mm.
But we have a very positive impact. The other day, we had a client that has been bringing some small gifts for the service that we provided.
Nice.
Like the smaller things
that
make an impact, not the bill that he's paying. Yeah, of course, it helps building the company and changing like your living standard and all those things. But the actual joy and the memories you keep are the ones that are provided through those gifts. So I think it's the other way around. And I think that is also, that's taking place on the KOL level.
Yeah.
It's taking place through projects building something for the longer distance or the next decade.
Yeah.
And that's just a transition where we're going through. And I think that over the next few years, this is continuing to change.
I think so, yeah. Because you probably saw it, but what was his name? Murad? At Token 2049 when he talked about the meme supercycle, and like I agreed with it and I was like, hey, I kind of get what you're saying, but then when you look at what happened on pump.fun 2 weeks ago, it's like that felt quite toppy for me. Do you know what I mean? It's like it was literally like there was a TV show called Black Mirror, and there's an episode in that where like it's this dystopian future where people are like locked in a room and they earn points and then they go on like a talent show and then they get like released from their room.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, it feels like exactly what happened on pump.fun. You know, like
I've seen the weirdest stuff.
Yeah,
that little kiddo that did the rock pool while on stream.
Yeah.
And the aftermath of doing that, that was just like, holy shit.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things, though, because, like, if he hadn't have done that, it would never have got to the market cap it got to.
True.
So, like, it only happened. And, I mean, how old was he? 15? He made 30 grand?
Even less, I think.
Yeah, does it? Like, can you imagine? Like, he's just like, I'm not going to do Twitch tonight. I'm going to do this pump.fun thing.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I've just made 30 grand. I think, like, aged 14, you're like, that has got to be all the money in the entire world. Where it's like, he went out and, like, bought 20 million FIFA points and he just got a team full of Erling Haalands, you know what I mean? All his friends are just like, how do you do that? And he's like, well, I'm this guy. You know?
That's also crypto, but I think that, it's the flip side.
Yeah.
And also, it's just sometimes it's quite annoying. Like the other day we had a project that we really felt like they had such a good use case, but then one of the team members was going into their tokenomics and they had a straight unlock for the team at TGE.
Really?
The liquidity wasn't really aligned with the amount of unlocks. And we were like, that's not good, my man.
Yeah.
So, we decided not to invest in it. And basically after the TGE, it went down 70% in a week.
Really?
And that,
it's
like,
a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just like, it's not like you don't know how to do it. Just like wait it out.
Certainly. It's what you would typically do in like a regular startup, right? Like you don't.
Yeah. If you're a Web2 founder, you're not going to get paid on your stocks at the actual opening day.
Absolutely not. No. Like
you're like full in debt.
Yeah. You probably won't even get paid at all, you know, for like.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. Like we didn't pay ourselves for 18 months, you know, and that.
Yeah.
Eventually, yeah, bills to pay, but I was like, I just don't want to. I just thought I was so. I still am there's no part of me that doubts that we won't be able to deliver it. Like, I just don't, the thought of this not working out doesn't enter my mind. I'm just like, I'm just convinced that what we have is a good solution, and it's now being verified by people in the market. You know, like, we were even just talking, talking on Tuesday, Chorley and I were talking about the way, and this is like quite niche, but it's quite cool. Like, the way that, because the cost of infrastructure is so expensive, right? So like, demand side platforms will pretty arbitrarily like filter the amount of traffic that can come through from someone that's selling ads, so they don't get like the full hose, because otherwise they're carrying the cost of listening to all those queries and requests for bids. But as far as I'm aware, you don't really send, like, if you're a demand side platform, you don't really send what you're willing to bid back to the sellers, which... But that's how an order book works, right? It's like, you know, okay, there's buyers at these prices and there's sellers at these prices, and there's a price in between where the market kind of finds it value. And
through the information that they can get.
And but what happens in ad tech is there's an auction that's hosted on the page every time it loads. So like, rather than there being like, it's almost counterintuitive as a decentralized exchange, but like one place where this all happens, it's happening on every single page load at the edge, and then it's being sent, and they're like, do you want to buy this? Whereas it really should be, here's what I'm selling, and like, here's what I'm prepared to pay for it, in the way that like a stock market works, right?
Yeah.
And you can like fill more of the impressions that have value, and then you can buy more of the impressions that have value, and you can just share a bit more what's going on. It goes from being like, okay, I'm reducing the traffic to this amount, and then I'll see what's in that amount. And it will still happen because some bids and some requests aren't eligible, right? Like if the traffic's from a bot, so it's like not valid traffic, it's not a human being, you don't want to buy that as an advertiser for obvious reasons, or it's on a website that's spoofing a URL, so that can happen quite a lot. Like, you don't want to waste your money on that. There's this whole notion of made for advertising websites where it's just people are writing an article with like two words in it and like 50 ad units, and they're trying to just like farm exchanges for money, and obviously you don't do that. It's a waste of money if you're doing using websites like that. But then I always think every website's made for advertising, because that's the way it's funded. It's just like people are taking it too far, and other people are maybe being contrite. But if there was just like more of this fair value between the two, and it's like, and that's the point I was making, it's like, I think that'll work. And then I ask a few people that I know that are experts, like, that's quite interesting. And then you think about how you buy it, but like, okay, that would be interesting for buyers. And it's like, well, and then I get to go like try and figure out how to build that thing. It's like, that is a pretty sweet position to be in. So it's, that's why I'm like, it's going to work out.
I think it's 100%. In the current situation, the middleman is making the money.
Oh yeah. It's a big
like
time.
Take the real estate markets.
Yeah.
The one selling you the property is making money on both sides.
Mm.
Big, enormous amounts of
money.
Yeah. And it's the same with ads. Like, it's just the selling party and the buying party just don't know the actual information that they need
totally
to have
right.
to make the actual decisions, usually one or two proposals or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert, but you don't have all the proposals or all the sellers.
Yeah.
And you don't know all the amount of buying that you can get. And that itself creates a spread between the two.
Yeah, exactly right.
And the middleman is just taking that cut.
Uh-huh.
And currently, and you mentioned AgriDex, but also Alchemy, you need to create marketplaces where the two are connected, and the one being more smart is the actual one making the money.
Yeah.
Totally. And then if you create that, and on top of that, you've got a whole ecosystem where you use those tokens or whatever stable currency you have and the value that you have, you can integrate that, swap it to different coins, and keep on using that in the same digital ecosystem. Keep on having value, adding collateral, whatever you want.
Mm.
If we have that, all of a sudden we pop up a lot, like so much value in this world, in this space where it's more efficient.
Yeah. And you're sharing it with people that create value rather than people that just want to take value out, you know, and I think that is like a better way for markets to work. Like it's more like bartering.
You
know what I mean? That's how markets used to exist, but then you get a better mechanism, but we won't go down the whole history of money route. But it just seems to be logical where you should have to add some value before you just start taking value out. And that should be, in my opinion, more than just a different kind of ad format or a different way of targeting that may or may not have an impact on the overall performance. I think just fundamentally what we think is if you remove the fees from buying ads online,
mm-hmm. basically the middleman,
how much more efficient will it be?
Yeah.
And let's see. We're starting to see in some of the results that we've had from campaigns, it can be like big sums of money. Like it's the first campaign that we ever ran was with IPG and AWS. They took a bit of a gamble on us and tested us out, and we were £5 cheaper for the same inventory. So per 1,000 ads, it was £5 difference. It was like £7.09, and we were £2.21.
If you talk about percentages, it's
well, yeah, it's a chunk. If you kind of percentage it up, it's like you get 212% more media with us.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you get, and because you're showing more ads to more people, you're more likely to find the people that are interested in your ads. And the campaign performance was 19% better than. Mm-hmm.
So both ways, you are just like...
It's just the capital has become more efficient, right? Yeah. And then like the outcomes of that, which are the results of the campaign or the revenue that you're earning, just improve because more money's being spent on what it is that you want to spend it on. You know, like it's a very benign example to give. It's like if you're filling your car up with petrol or electricity and 43% of it doesn't go in, but you're paying for it, and you know, I've run out of petrol again before I've got home, like what's happened? And it's like, well, you didn't get what you paid for. I think very simply that's what we're saying, is that you can prove on our ledger you got what you paid for, and because there's a ledger, there's loads of benefits to infrastructure, which is distributed cost, you pass those savings on, and just the whole thing kind of just ties up quite nicely together. And yeah, it's starting to work, I think.
Yeah,
is the cool part. I think, Michael, we could probably talk for hours and hours and hours.
We are talking for an hour already.
We are.
Okay.
Well, that. How about we round it up? What's your like most out there prediction for the next 6 to 12 months? Like, get bullish on me.
I mean, I keep on saying that. We are still in the bear market PTSD period.
Okay, yeah, fine.
We're at the start of the bull. Mm. And I think that we are going to have a cycle that's comparable to 2017.
Okay, yeah. Percentage-wise, you think? Like?
Yeah, well, I mean, 2017 attracted a whole new group of investors through retail and just enabling ICOs and all those things. 2021 was the VC cycle.
Yeah.
And now we have institutional investors, BlackRock having a tokenization fund. We have government stepping in.
Yeah.
So on all levels, it's the big cycle.
Yeah, okay, it makes sense, yeah.
So I'm in debate with myself of whether we're going to peak next year. It requires more money to actually move Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So it's going to be harder at some point too. But I think that if we talk about this cycle and how high we can go, I think you should be comparing it to the dot-com bubble.
Yeah, okay.
And in that sense, the dot-com bubble was between 10 to 15 trillion back in the day. If you fast forward it to now, it's 30 to 35 trillion through inflation.
Christ, yeah.
So if you have that and then the current market cap is like, what is it, 3.5? Then I think that it's not strange to say that Bitcoin should have been going through 100K previous cycle. It's doing it right now.
Yeah.
But then it's probably going to go higher, which I think is going to be around 500,000 to 600K.
Okay.
That's generally what I expect it to go to.
Yeah.
And also I expect it to go into that phase in a longer period, more liquidity driven. So we erase the 4-year cycle.
Yeah.
And then have a longer bear market comparable to the dot-com bubble as well.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And from there, we get the actual adoption taking place. So that's generally how I feel like these markets are going to go moving forward. Mm. I hope Bitcoin is going to stagnate for a little bit. And I think we have not seen yet what Ethereum is going to do.
I agree with that, yeah.
If Ethereum can even double against Bitcoin for a certain period of time, and we know that Bitcoin can triple or do a 5x in terms of price, then we know where Ethereum is going to go to. But in terms of fundamental growth, there is an actual reason why BlackRock is investing hundreds of millions into Ethereum dApps.
Yeah.
And not in Solana.
Yeah.
So that money is going to pour out at some point because the best teams are building on ETH.
Yeah.
So we've not seen anything yet. It's just about to be unlocked.
I think I agree with you. It's Ethereum. Solana is great for various reasons, right?
It is. It has a different purpose.
Yeah, Ethereum is. It seems to be where the sensible stuff is being built. You know, like stablecoins are built on Ethereum.
DeFi is built on Ethereum.
DeFi is built on Ethereum. And you hear about banks that are using Ethereum for their rails, for their private blockchains that they're using. It's like
governments even.
You don't quite hear that yet for Solana. No, that's not to say it wouldn't happen, but I totally agree with you.
I think it would happen for at some point for Solana.
It's but just for a bit younger. It's four years younger.
It just had its issues like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And Solana is just really experiencing its first cycle. Mm. Just like Avalanche and Near and all those other layer ones that have been having their issues in the previous cycle. And now they all pivot towards one vertical.
Mm.
For instance, ETH is just the layer one out there.
Yeah.
You've got Solana for high throughput. You've got Peak, for instance, for deep in.
Mm.
You've got Near that has its own purpose. You've got AVAX. So they all have like their own niche and they're connected to each other.
Yeah.
And probably in a year of like 5 years from now, we will be seeing or hearing layer ones taking over other layer ones.
Yeah.
Layer ones building on top of Ether or connecting, or it's just how it goes. But I think that Ether is by far the most undervalued one there.
Yeah, I would agree. It's not even at its all-time high, is it? So
no.
It's got a long way to go.
Against Bitcoin, it's at the cycle low still.
Yeah, so, well, that'll be fun. But Michael, thank you. Thoroughly enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you for being here.
I'll have to host you in London the next time you're over. And give us a chance to improve our set slightly because I've got a bit of envy about how good it looks in here. But thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Cheers. See you again.
Yes, cheers. Definitely. If you enjoyed that episode, there's many more on our YouTube channel, on our Spotify and Apple podcasts. To make sure you don't miss the next episode, make sure you have your notifications turned on so you can hear the next great conversation we have with our next guest.